From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Pritzker Pavilion at Millennium Park in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. So here we are, as Carl said, in the beautiful Pritzker Pavilion for our annual outdoor show here in Chicago's lakefront. Last year, of course, it rained torrents on us. This year, it's about 20 degrees below what it should be. And the time has come to face facts. I think we are cursed. NPR never should have traded Babe Ruth for Daniel Shore. If we waste any more time, though, we'll end the show with a round of who's got hypothermia this time. So let's get started. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jill.
Hi, Jill. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks. How about yourself?
Oh, we're fine. We're a little chilled, but that's okay.
You don't live in California. That's
I know.
Problem.
I was about to say. Since you live in California, to be chilled is to experience temperatures sometimes lower than 70 degrees. It induces a feeling of discomfort and dismay in the human body. Well, Joel, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe and the author of the new book, in bookstores now, Idiot America. The man is Charlie Pierce.
Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Jill.
Next, say hello to the woman behind the syndicated column Ask Amy and the author of the best-selling memoir The Mighty Queens of Freeville, Ms. Amy Dickinson, right there.
Hi, Jill.
And finally, say hello to the writer, director, comedian, and bon vivant who will be here with his Paul Prevenza's Green Room show in Chicago next weekend, Mr. Paul Prevenza.
Hello, Jill.
So, Jill, welcome to the show. Now, we are going to play a new game with you, and we are calling it...
Son of the Return of the Summer Blockbuster Sequel to Part 2 Returns, even Blockbusterer.
It's summer sequel season. We got the new Transformer movie. We got the new Night at the Museum movie. We've got Harry Potter and the Strange New Feelings. But it's magic, Harry. But
remember, Peter, the wand finds the wizard.
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, it occurred to us this week that some newsmakers are making a second or even third return to the spotlight as well. So Carl right now is going to perform for you movie trailers for three more summer sequels based on the week's news this time. Tell us who or what this movie is about. Two times out of three, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine.
Excellent.
All right, ready to do this?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's lower the lights. Here is your first movie trailer.
The star of Room with a View of Russia and the mother in Knocked Up returns for another adventure. She's a firecracker with high heels, rimless glasses, and a list of grievances. And is she back? You betcha.
So who's that movie about?
It's
got to
be Sarah Palin.
It is Sarah Palin. This week, Governor Palin attended a major GOP fundraising dinner in Washington where first she had been invited to speak, then she said she had never been invited, so she was disinvited, then she complained that she hadn't been invited, so she was reinvited, and thus stole the focus from the people who had disinvited her because she might steal the focus.
Oh my.
By the end of the week, there she was, smiling, looking good, sounding folksy, standing on top of a pile of smoldering political wreckage. Sound familiar? She also this week... lashed out publicly at David Letterman, the comedian who made some tasteless jokes about her and her daughter. She taught the comedian a lesson, of course, but while she was occupied with her feud with Letterman, Russian forces took advantage of the distraction and occupied Wasilla.
So let me get this straight. She was invited, then disinvited, then she thought she was invited, but she wasn't invited. It's a lot like the election, really, when you think about it.
It's true. It's true. Well, let's move on. Here is your next movie.
16 years ago, the Clintons tried and failed. Well, that was then, and this is now. Hold on to your appendix, because a government bureaucrat will be taking it out with a letter opener. Be afraid.
So that's a scary movie about the possible return of what big issue this summer?
It's got to be health care.
It is government health care. Call this movie, if you will. Call it Harry and Louise 2, Drag Me to Health. 16 years after government-run health care for all was killed, President Obama is resurrecting it. He has that power, did you know? He just touches things. They come back to life. Observers are crediting him, though, with making the policy more palatable this time, because judging from TV ratings, Americans can't get enough of health care under certain circumstances. So, under Obama's plan, all doctors will be required to be either dreamy or, barring that, crotchety with a cane. Either works. Now, we're sure this is going to work out because what Obama's doing, and this is true, is he's not imposing it on Congress like the Clinton strike. He is letting Congress work out all the details, which is very comforting because I want you to imagine, like, say you're getting hit by a, you get hit by a car, say, God forbid, you get hit by a car and you're lying there in a haze of pain, and over you, there's Charlie Rangel and Barney Frank arguing about your care. And you wake up in the recovery room, both your legs have been amputated, but there's $50 million been appropriated to build a cultural center in your name in Rangel's district. So, you'll be good.
I'm not big on the government taking control of a lot of things that that are kind of complicated. Like, you know, on the on your driver's license where you can donate your organs?
Yeah.
I don't feel good about the government having anything to do with that.
It does strike me that we give the government vast power to, say, invade other countries.
Now we're going to let them invade our intestines.
Maybe they'll do that, like unmanned predator drones doing surgery on you.
Yeah. It's not going to be an infection anymore. It's going to be an insurgency.
There you are. All right, here's your last big summer sequel.
She stole our hearts in Peggy Sue Got Opposite Married. She captivated us in Breeze, the mystery of the exposed boob. Now she's back in her most explosive film yet, Breach of Contract.
So that's the movie about a young woman we just can't stop talking about here. She kept the tiara, but she lost her job. Who?
Oh, is that Miss California?
Yes, Miss California, Carrie Prejean. She is, of course, the most successful runner-up in American history. Well, that is, other than George W. Bush. And Carrie Prejean finally this week lost her crown as Miss California just a few weeks after Donald Trump himself promised her she could keep it. Trump said that she just would not execute her duties as Miss California. Trump said that.
Can we speculate on what those duties may have
evolved
into?
We assumed that the duties of Miss California were just standing around in loose clothing waiting for a strong breeze, which seemed to be what she did. The new Miss California, and rest easy, America, there is one. She says she'll be happy to do all that the job requires. Requirements like public speaking, some partially nude light filing, and trapping and killing Mr. Trump's hair pieces. Carl, how did Jill do in our quiz?
Jill was perfect. Peter, 3 correct answers. So, Jill, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done.
Yay! I can't wait.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, people still sometimes criticize President Obama for being an elitist, a Dijon mustard-eating, foreign name correctly pronouncing aristocrat. Well, it certainly didn't help him with those people when it was revealed that during the president's dinner date with his wife in Paris last weekend, he employed a person to do what?
Taste his food.
Exactly right. Much like Louis XIV of France, who, by the way, also campaigned on the slogan, Change You Can Believe In, President Obama employs a food taster, a Secret Service officer who went into the kitchen of the fancy French restaurant, took a tiny bite out of each dish before it was served to the first couple, did not die, and then approved it. Now, we assume, before you get hard on President Obama, we assume that this is standard security procedure for all presidents. There were tasters who sampled President Clinton's Big Macs and his interns. There was... There were tasters who sampled President George Bush's Lunchables, but because this is President Obama, the taster was empowered not only to check for poisons, but also to detect inappropriate wine pairings and cliched platings.
Do you think this guy thought of that when he was going to, like, Secret Service Academy?
Yeah.
You got to go through the obstacle course, and now you got to do your marksmanship, and now you got to sit down and try five different flambés, because you never know.
Your only job is not to keel over.
Exactly.
Like, I could do that.
I'm just imagining them bring out an untested plate of foie gras or something, and the guy yells, "No!" Leaps in front of us.
In slow motion.
But what if he really likes it? It's like, "No, Mr. President, I don't think you should have this. I need another taste." I think.
As a Secret Service officer, you have to take cilantro for the president.
You do. Amy, those people like myself who are wondering when we get to buy our tickets for a vacation in space, we were struck another blow this week. A scientist says that even if long-distance space travel ever becomes practical, it would have what effect on the travelers?
It would make your fine lines and wrinkles get worse.
Yeah, actually, you're right. It would make you ugly. According to astrobiologist Dr. Lewis Dartness, exposure to zero gravity for long periods, well, let me put it this way. Heidi Klum gets on the spaceship. On the other end, out comes Shrek. Because what happens is, with no gravity, your muscles atrophy and your body compresses into a more ball-like shape, which is the first thing. The second thing that happens is fluid buildup in your skull will give you an awful misshapen look to your head. So it turns out, In the prequel to E.T. they're making, when he gets in a spaceship to come here, he's played by George Clooney. Thank you, everybody. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wolf from Williamsburg, Kentucky.
Hey, Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fine. What's in Williamsburg?
Not much.
There you are. So you just sit around and call quiz shows for entertainment?
Yes, I do.
Well, there you are. Lucky us. Well, welcome to the show, Andy. You're going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Andy's topic?
Kicking it old school.
Oh, no.
Sometimes if you want to get something done, you got to turn back the clock. Well, this week we read about someone solving a modern problem with antique methods. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of people using some old-fashioned know-how to help them in the 21st century. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Yes, I am.
First, let's hear from Charlie Pierce.
The Ballynock Country Club in County Mayo, Ireland, had tried everything to replenish the greens of its fairways and to once again have people putting on greens instead of browns. A drought plus overuse had driven the owners of the course to distraction, and as a last resort, they sought relief from Irish prehistory. Lambeth McLaughlin, a Druid priest, was called in to perform an ancient ceremony called the Green Blessing over the course in the hopes that it would once again spring back to life. "We tried everything else," said course superintendent Miles McGowan. "We had nothing to lose." It should be noted that on the afternoon after the blessing was performed, rain did fall and two players scored holes in one on the par 3 fifth hole. "We will take credit for the rain, perhaps," said the priest, "but throughout history, no deity of any kind has ever been involved in the game of golf."
Druids bringing rain to a golf course in Ireland. Your next story of the past in the present comes from Amy Dickinson.
Prisoners have always been ingenious. They used their socks as coffee filters and teaspoons as shovels. But now, in snooty old England, officials have uncovered inmates using obscure Elizabethan slang as a way to communicate with contacts to smuggle drugs and contraband into the hoose cow. It's known as rogue's cant, an arcane slang first used in medieval times. The language shows up in Shakespeare. Prisoners will say chat or onic for heroin. Calby is crack cocaine. Inic means a cell phone. But prisoners don't only use 500-year-old slang. They've adopted modern language to use in code, too. For instance, bringing the children means to bring drugs, and the phrase lots of hair on the children means bring lots of drugs. Oddly, when prisoners use the phrase bringing lots of drugs, that means bringing lots of our hairy children.
Modern prisoners using Elizabethan prison slang to smuggle drugs past the guards. Your last story of something old, something new comes from Paul Provenza.
Locating terrorists hidden in Afghan and Pakistani caves and rocky outposts has proven almost impossible for military intelligence and reconnaissance. Even with billions of dollars of technology on their side, they can only approximate their whereabouts. making strikes almost impossible. Even Google Maps hasn't helped, said one intelligence officer. So the military has unveiled their latest hopeful technology, homing pigeons. Fitted with nanotechnology cameras, the birds roam the canyons and rocky outcroppings in hopes that they will surreptitiously pick up activity or materiel and return with images to help pinpoint their locations. So far, no luck, but the program has just begun, said Army spokeswoman Maggie Regisis. Most of the birds are functioning as we hoped, though a few have gone far off course, and we ended up with hundreds of photographs of statues and car windows in Kabul.
All right. So, Andy.
Yes.
Here are your choices. From Charlie Pierce, druids and their ancient rituals being used to bring rain to golf courses in Ireland. From Amy Dickinson, modern prisoners using Elizabethan slang, the Sly Devils, to smuggle drugs. Or from Paul Prevenza, homing pigeons used in Afghanistan to pinpoint our enemies from above. Which of these is the story of an ancient technique applied to a modern problem?
I think I'm going to have to go with the third one.
The third one. So your choice then is Paul's story of the homing pigeons being used in Afghanistan. Well, we spoke to someone very familiar with the real story.
It's a little puzzling to think of underworld figures doing any research on this. I'm very suspicious of this idea that in some ways these terms are actually derived at all from Elizabethan English.
That was a skeptical David Bevington. He's a Shakespeare scholar at the University of Chicago. Sadly, as you have figured out, the real story was, in fact, Amy's about the convicts using Elizabethan slang. You did not win our prize, but you did earn a point for Paul, who I know is very grateful because he's making his happy face. So thank you so much for that, and thank you so much
You're
for playing.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Brush up your Shakespeare, and they'll all kowtow. Think sow, and they'll all kowtow. Odds Bodkins, all kowtow.
And now the game where we ask masters of one universe about another universe entirely. The Blues are a legend in Chicago, and Lil' Ed Williams is a legend in Chicago Blues. The Boston Globe called Lil' Ed and the Blues Imperials the world's number one house rockin' band. And if that weren't enough, Lil' Ed is also the man who taught Conan O'Brien to play the blues. And he is, in fact, pretty little. Lil' Ed Williams, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Great to have you.
Hey,
Let's start with a nickname. Okay. All great bluesmen have to have a nickname. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you pick yours, or was it picked for you?
Actually, I picked my own.
You picked your
own. Yeah.
Were you trying to forestall other ones? I mean, you're like, I'll just be little. I'll just be just give me that one. I'll go with that.
No, I was just the smallest one in the group. So
really,
yeah.
Right. Did other members of the group have their own like slightly chubby Bob and stuff like that?
No. Not really.
No. And tell me how you formed your band, mm-hmm. and tell me how you got the name, the Blues Imperials.
Well, me and my brother, we were sitting down eating some popcorn, mm-hmm. you know, looking at TV, having
yeah.
a good time.
Having the blues.
Yeah, having the blues.
Like, oh, we're eating this popcorn, and some of the kernels are burned. And,
that's right.
Yeah.
And we were looking at the Imperial Margarine.
The Imperial Margarine commercial.
Yeah, and we were trying to think of that name, so that's how I came up with Lil' Ed and the Blues Imperials.
Right.
It's lucky, too. It's lucky if you happen to have that kind of butter, because Lil' Ed and the Blues Land of Lakes is awful. It's a terrible name.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's the Blues. That would have been a bad name, too.
I can't believe it's not the Blues.
Hey, so, that's a good song, though.
There you go.
Now, I know your audience at home can't see this, but you are wearing a very colorful fez right now.
Yes.
This is your trademark, but it's actually sort of almost a crown that you inherited. Is that the story?
Yes. It was formed by my uncle, J.B. Huddle.
Who is a legend in Chicago Blues himself.
Yes. He would take me into bars and paint mustaches on me and put big white hats on me.
Wait a minute. Stop right there. Unfamiliar as I am with the blues world, my understanding was that you grew your mustaches naturally.
Well,
not when you're six.
Was that what it was? That it was he was getting you in underage into these clubs?
Yes, I was 16 at the time.
And he would paint little mustaches on you to get
yeah.
you in? All right, now I'm going to say this too, because the blues, as we know, it's generally about being unhappy. You seem pretty happy just on first acquaintance.
Well, you don't have to be unhappy to have the blues.
I honestly thought you did. I mean, I really thought that was the point, that you were unhappy and you sang the blues. That's why they're called the blues. Like, oh boy, I'm singing the blues now. It's not like, oh boy, I won the lottery, I'm singing the blues. It's...
Yeah, because you're thinking about all that money you got to give to other people.
Oh, really? Now, you're sitting here, we're very lucky, you brought out your guitar.
Yeah.
And you are, in fact, what we are known as like the king of the blues slide guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So what attracted you to the music? Let me just put it that way.
Well, it was my uncle's slide that actually attracted me.
Right.
Because it would shimmy.
Mm.
Like that. Because at that time, there wasn't 100-watt bulbs and 60 watts. It was only 40 watts in the house at that time.
Right.
So it was kind of dim, but the slide would shimmy in the darkness.
Really? So it was actually dark in the room, and you'd actually see it.
And it would shimmy, and he would... You know, slide up and down the neck with it, and I thought it was real cool.
Wow. Tell me about Chicago blues. What is Chicago blues as opposed to Memphis blues? Is it a musical sound? Is it an attitude? Is it a kind of lyric?
Chicago blues is pretty much all that, what you said, plus it's feeling, love, and fun, and happiness.
Love and fun and happiness.
Yes.
Again, I don't associate these things with the blues, clearly. Aren't you obligated to
You must not have the blues.
I clearly.
You're far too miserable to have the blues, Peter.
Apparently. The Chicago blues have lasted for so long and will last forever, I know. But is it odd to you or even frustrating sometimes that you're playing your music that is so difficult to play and so beautiful to hear, and what the kids are flocking to are musicians who A, can't sing, and B, can't play instruments?
Yeah, I think about it sometime. Yeah.
Finally, I depressed you. Yeah. I knew I could do it.
Good going there, Peter.
Well, maybe I should stop talking and let you give us a sample of what you're talking about.
I like everything neat, nice and tight. You might think I'm funny. I like to make it right, cause I'm a compact man. I'm a compact man. Well, I'm a compact man. Keep things as tight as I can. I got a little bit suitcase, little guitar. When I get rid, I get in my compact car. Compact man. I'm a compact man. Well, I'm a compact man. Keep things as tight as I can.
Woo! Yeah, ladies and gentlemen. That, from now on, is my theme song, baby. Absolutely. Well, listen, Lil Ebb, we are delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here, though, to play a game we're calling...
My, you're a large.
So, we like your approach toward the nickname thing. It's modest, it's truthful, it's literal. Others have gone another way. We're going to ask you three questions about self-styled big things in people.
Okay.
Get two questions right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners. Carl's voice on the home answering machine. Carl, who is Lil Ed playing for?
Peter is playing for Kate Kisner of Chicago, Illinois.
Well done, Kate. All right, first question is about the big unit. That's pitcher Randy Johnson. Despite his imposing height, his mullet, his sneer, Mr. Johnson has a softer side, as evidenced by what? A, he used to call his slider, his signature out pitch, Mr. Snappy. B, in his back pocket in every game, a Smurfette figurine. Or C, after being caught swearing on camera, he now only says fudge when he gives up a hit or home run. Fudge, he says. So he does one of his pitches Mr. Snappy. It's his nickname.
Okay.
He's got a little Smurfette thing in his pocket for good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Or he only says fudge when he's frustrated. The big unit.
I'm going to go for fudge.
You're going to go for fudge?
Yeah. I like fudge.
You like fudge? Yeah, me too. No, actually, it's Mr. Snappy. Oh, he calls his nickname for his slider, his most effective pitch, is Mr. Snappy, at least at one time. All right, you still got some more chances here.
Okay.
And if you blow this, it's another song. Here we go. The Big Mac. The Big Mac is next. That's the McDonald's hamburger. It was actually involved in a scandal some years ago. What happened? A, a group of Southern California restaurants started using Kraft Thousand Island dressing instead of special sauce, and people liked it more. B, the company tried to corrupt rap musicians by paying them to name-check the Big Mac in their songs. Or C, the company threatened to sue a 23-year-old birthday party clown who advertised himself as Big Mac Leibowitz.
Okay. I'm going to go with A on that
one.
You're
going to go with A. You're going to go with they started using Kraft Thousand Island, yeah, and everybody's like, oh, this is much better.
Yeah.
Oh, would that it were true.
Oh.
It was actually, Big Mac was paying rappers. They offered any rapper who put in Big Mac in any of their songs.
Wow.
Every time it got on the radio, they'd get $5. And one
Man,
rapper.
I wish I'd have known that.
Well, you can do it now. Because let me give you a hint. There's a rapper named Mad Skills. He recorded a song with the lyric, all right, Big Mac, Big Mac, Big Mac. Now, where's my check? All right, let's get one right here if we can. It's about the famed British pro wrestler known as Big Daddy. He died some years ago. Why did he take the name Big Daddy as a nom de ring, if you will? A, he had 17 children by various mothers. Mm. B, his real name was Shirley Crabtree Jr. Or C, he thought presenting himself as a father figure would psychologically intimidate the other wrestlers, notoriously insecure.
I'm going to go with A on that one.
You're going to go with A. He had 17 children by various mothers?
Yeah.
No, his real name is Shirley Crabtree Jr.
No!
Shirley Crabtree Jr. wouldn't have made a good professional wrestler name. That said,
I would think that that's pretty intimidating for an opponent.
That is.
Yeah.
Get up against Shirley Crabtree. Because if you lose that fight, really, you can just hang it up.
Yeah, that's right.
He was a pretty big guy, though, Big Daddy. So, Carl, how did blues legend Lil Ed do in our quiz?
Not too well, Peter. He needed two correct answers to win for Kate Kinzer. He had no correct answer.
Lil Ed and the Blues Imperials have a new album. It's called Full Tilt. Lil Ed, thank you so much for being here. Okay, Lil Ed, if you would not mind, could you play a song?
All right.
One more song for us? Thank you. Everybody. In just a minute, Carl will recreate some voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play Who's Carl this time, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paul, the commissioners of Cleburne County, Texas, have unanimously voted that all county employees shall cease and desist saying the word hello. They have. Instead, they're going to say what?
Well, that's a crazy way to greet someone by
I kind of have a lot of power right now, don't
you
I, Peter?
You can say you can do that.
I'm going to go with howdy.
No. I'll give you a hint. It was kind of a religious objection.
A religious objection for saying, oh, they're going to say heaven-o?
Exactly. That's what they're going to say.
Wow.
No.
You can call up the county offices in Cleburne County, Texas, and they will answer the phone. They'll say, heaven-o. The change comes at the urging of one resident, Leonzo Canales Jr. He's been on a decades-long quest to end the demonic use of what he would call the H-word, hello, because it has hell right there lurking in the middle. He says, quote, I think it's time that we set a new precedent to tell our kids that we are positive adults and to tell them that we are crazy in the manner of stuff you find at the bottom of bat caves. Others are embarrassed by this change, as you can imagine. They're urging people to go back to the traditional Texas greeting, a warning shot fired over the head.
But, you know, I could just hear it.
H-E double hockey sticks O.
Or... Heaven O, how may I help you? Yeah, that doesn't work.
A small but subtle rebellion, yes.
That doesn't work.
Paul, when the American Veterinary Medical Association holds its convention in Seattle next month, they'll be hitting all the big tourist attractions in that great town, but one of Seattle's best-known institutions, the Pike Place Fish Market, may be changing its ways in response to criticism. What is going to be different?
They're not going to be throwing fish around anymore.
Right. Well, actually, I'll give it to you. They're going to be throwing rubber fish. This is why, you all know, Seattle's Pike Place Market, burly guys in aprons tossing giant fish through the air. Now, the veterinarians invited the fishmongers to their convention for sort of a team-building, fish-throwing event. Then PETA stepped in. They said tossing fish through the air, quote, celebrates cruelty to marine animals, even though these fish are already as dead as the Oldsmobile division. So... they recommended that the fishmongers toss rubber fish instead, and the Veterinary Association is considering the request. Having now protected dead fish, PETA is turning its eye to the plight of metaphorical fish. They ask now that you don't say, like a fish out of water, instead saying, like a guy who was from somewhere, but he's now somewhere else, and he doesn't know it as well as the place he's from.
How do they know it's cruel for fish to fly through the air? Maybe fish want nothing more than to be able to fly through the air.
Maybe they dream of it.
Maybe that would be the height of perfection.
Maybe
fish.
Maybe cod right now are glaring up at the surface going, if I can just get up enough speed.
But these are dead fish that they're defending, right?
No, it's but there's like Jonathan Livingston Haddock. I really like your idea.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. These are dead fish.
I would agree. I would say, okay, Peter, we're going to throw rubber fish, but I would do it in fur coats. That would teach you a lesson.
You know what's worse? The Veterinary Association, they said, okay, yeah, maybe. Maybe it's a little weird to have live, you know, or live or formerly alive fish. We'll use rubber fish. Now they're being protested by PETER, People for the Ethical Treatment of Rubber.
PETER.
You just can't win. Charlie, the AP is reporting that another common product may have similar effects as Viagra. What?
Ooh.
Golf.
Have you ever met any golfers, Charlie?
Oh, yes.
All right. No, not that. Something you can buy. Something you can buy in most any grocery store. Sometimes roadside stands.
Turnips.
No.
I'm working the aisles. Hang on. I'm working right from aisle one to aisle nine. I'm going to get the cleaning products pretty soon, and that's really going to be embarrassing.
This explains why Pfizer is developing seedless Viagra, I guess.
What, grapes?
No, not grapes.
Watermelon.
Watermelon. Of course, this is not so much a new thing as an elaboration, because nice melons have been helping men get over ED for years, of course. But a researcher at Texas's A&M's Fruit and Vegetable Improvement Center.
Oh.
Aren't we glad they have one?
Oh, man.
That researcher says that a substance in watermelon called citrulline can trigger production of a compound that relaxes blood vessels. That's similar to the action that Viagra does. The bad news, it takes 6 cups of watermelon to achieve the desired effect. The problem is that much watermelon acts as a diuretic. That's one of the worst combinations of effects in medical history. Leading to the don't move, be right back syndrome. This could make, by the way, if you ever figure this out, your 4th of July barbecue with the family a little more awkward. Texas A&M advises dads working the barbecue to stay one step back from the grill surface.
Going on a picnic,
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's time for Carl to recreate some voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, and you can download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. And you can check us out on Twitter at twitter.com/waitwait. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jason Brandenburg from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing fine. What do you do there in Boston?
I'm actually a paralegal and a musician.
A musician?
Yes, okay. And I'll be going to school in the fall to become a chef.
Paralegal, musician, chef.
That's right.
So you can accompany the dinner that you make for somebody... And then sue yourself when they're poisoned. I don't know.
It doesn't really work, but I like where you're going.
All right. Well, Jason, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Now, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to recreate three quotations from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, Carl will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I am.
Here's your first quote.
I don't know anything about cars. A business is a business, and I think I can learn about cars. I'm not that old.
And that was a 67-year-old man named Edward Whitaker Jr., the man recently appointed to take the reins of what company?
Would that be General Motors?
It would be. Mr. Whitaker, the former head of AT&T, was appointed to take over GM on Tuesday. For his part, Whitaker, who is incidentally nicknamed Big Ed, he promises he's going to learn about cars, but in the meantime, he will draw on his experience and success at AT&T. They're starting with some new initiatives, including GM's new family plan. It allows current GM owners a chance to buy another car for a family member for just $10. There will no longer be penalties for rollovers. And this is their new strategy. They're going to sell you a new Buick, say, for just $300, but then it's $1,000 a month plus, of course, roaming charges.
Oh.
All right, very good. Here is your next quote.
I hope... she can find a wise Latina doctor to set that ankle as opposed to an average white doctor.
That was Rush Limbaugh offering his best wishes to a woman who broke her ankle early this week. Who?
Judge Sotomayor.
Exactly. Judge Sonia Sotomayor, the Supreme Court nominee. She fractured her right ankle at New York's LaGuardia Airport on Monday while on her way to meetings with senators, leading to another round of attacks from right-wing pundits. Some speculated that she broke her right ankle because, of course, she favors the left. Okay, they didn't say that. But one Heather McDonald of the National Review Online did criticize her writing style. She said, and this is true, that Sotomayor, quote, sticks commas into clauses randomly, unquote. Now, a truly great prose stylist like Mr. Limbaugh, for example, doesn't use commas at all, because a comma in his text would require him to shut up for a second.
Do you think, like, okay, so she broke her ankle at the airport. Is
yes.
this like a slip and fall situation?
Yeah, she tripped.
So do you think she's going to call one of those 1-800 slip and fall lawyers
yeah,
to,
think?
Like, represent her? And
I could probably help with that.
Really?
Oh.
And make her a little something to eat.
There you go.
There you go.
Little soup, play her a song, file a motion. There you go.
Here is your last quote.
I was like, I'm going to glue rhinestones on my eyelids.
That was somebody finally coming out of the closet this week in a big cover story in Rolling Stone magazine. Who was it?
Robert Pattinson?
I don't know
Not
if you could
Robert,
hear it.
No!
All over this nation, 14-year-old girls fainted dead away. No, not him. He was, he just failed to win a big competition on TV.
Oh. Oh, the guy from,
Terry McAuliffe.
I have no idea.
You don't know? I thought everybody knew about this guy. His name is Adam Lambert, is his name. He lost in the finals of American Idol. That was shocking. People thought he was the favorite to win. You know what wasn't shocking? When he came out of the closet. If you're keeping score, he becomes the second man after Clay Aiken to lose American Idol, then come out of the closet in a magazine, and then probably become a bigger star than the guy who beat him. Now, of course, an amazing coup for Rolling Stone. Look for future exposés in which Keith Richards admits once experimenting with drugs. And this will be a shocker. Cher reveals she had a romantic relationship with Sonny Bono. Carl, how did Jason do in our quiz?
Jason had two correct answers, Peter, and that's good enough to win our prize.
Well done.
Woo-hoo.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Charlie Pierce has the lead, Peter, with 4 points. Paul Provenza has 3. Amy Dickinson, 2.
Okay. Amy, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Two U.S. reporters were found guilty of illegal entry in hostile acts by a court in blank.
North Korea.
Right. Captain Chesley Sullenberger testified before the National Transportation Safety Board about ditching his plane in the blank.
Hudson River.
Right. A top U.N. official condemned an attack Tuesday on a luxury hotel in blank.
Pakistan.
Right. President Obama promised that the stimulus bill will produce 600,000 new blanks this summer.
Jobs.
Right. As part of his historic visit to Rome, Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi has requested to meet with blank.
The Pope.
No, 700 Italian women.
Oh, right.
I can't imagine why. On Friday, TV stations across the country switched to blank transmissions.
They went to digital.
Yes. Gary Gaines, the high school football coach portrayed in the TV series Blank, has returned to his old job in Odessa, Texas.
Friday Night Lights?
Right. To stop people from speeding, traffic police in Russia are putting out blanks.
Shooting out tires.
No. They're putting out cardboard cutouts of Brad Pitt dressed as a traffic cop.
Of course they are.
Brad Pitt is now monitoring the most dangerous intersections in Omsk and is actually helping to cut down on speeding tickets. A local official said that Brad Pitt is, quote, kind of like a colleague for us, so it seemed a logical thing to do. The idea was actually suggested by this official's girlfriend, cardboard Angelina Jolie. She always listens to his problems.
Right. Well, two dimensions is better than none, you know?
Well, Carl, Amy did very well, I thought. How did she do in our quiz?
She did very well, Peter. 6 correct answers for 12 more points. Amy now has 14 points and the lead.
All right, Paul, you're up next. Yes, fill in the blank. After the Supreme Court cleared the way, Chrysler finalized its deal with blank.
Fiat.
Right, the day after a white supremacist killed a security guard, the U.S. blank museum closed in that guard's honor.
Holocaust Museum.
Right. This week, 10 banks received permission from the Treasury to pay back money they received in the blank.
Bailout.
Right, President Obama ordered an additional 21,000 troops to be deployed to blank.
Afghanistan.
Right, police in Seattle arrested 3 people Monday night on charges of robbing 3 people at blank point.
Gunpoint.
No, at Fork Point.
Fork Point.
The longtime leader of Gabon, Blank, died at age 73.
Oh, geez. I can't pass. Go ahead.
Omar Bongo.
Thank you.
After he made an off-color joke about her daughter, Sarah Palin lashed out at Blank.
Letterman.
Right. A federal court in Argentina dismissed charges against an accused counterfeiter because Blank.
Because he was compact.
No, because he did such a lousy job of counterfeiting. Judges at the federal court in Buenos Aires could hardly keep themselves from snickering as they reviewed the counterfeit bills that Marcos Ribles had made. The court ruled that the Argentine and U.S. bills were, quote, so clumsy and crude that they could not be accepted by most people, unquote. Primarily because most people realize that Hello Kitty never did serve as president of the United States. Carl, how did Paul do in our quiz?
Paul had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13, but Amy still has the lead with 14
there
points.
There you are.
Yeah, girl.
All right. How many, then, does Charlie need to take it from her?
5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
Ooh. All right, Charlie, this is for the game. On Thursday, the Senate voted to give the FDA power to regulate blank.
Tobacco.
Right. A couple in Washington, D.C. was arrested and charged with spying for blank for almost 30 years.
Cuba.
Right. Investigators worked to determine what caused an explosion in a North Carolina plant that makes blank.
Slim Jim.
Right. On Tuesday, the first detainee from blank arrived in New York to
Guantanamo.
Be tried. Right. A woman in Germany quickly ended a game of fetch when her dog returned with blank.
A hand grenade.
Right, a live hand grenade. On Monday, Apple announced the latest versions of the MacBook and the blank.
The iPhone.
Right, the Colbert Report went on the road this week, broadcasting from blank.
Iraq.
Right, an intoxicated Wisconsin woman crashed her car because she was driving, talking on her cell, and blanking at the same time.
Drinking.
No, drying the pants she should have been wearing
what?
Out the car window. Multitasking, we'll all agree, generally all right. But not when it involves stripping down to your undies and driving with your wet pants flapping in the wind. The woman escaped without injury when she rolled her car into a ditch by the side of the road, perhaps in an attempt to give her pants a more weathered look.
Distressed.
Carl, did Charlie do well enough to win?
He had more than enough, Peter. Charlie had 7 correct answers, so with 18 points,
Charlie Pierce
is this week's champion.
Bravo. Well done, Charlie.
Thank you, sir.
In just a minute, we're going to ask the panelists to predict what hidden clause, what big surprise will be in the new healthcare plan. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight, 436 miles on 1 gallon of fuel, to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. Lumber Liquidators, hardwood flooring direct from the mill. Information at 1-800-HARDWOOD or lumberliquidators.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Litterman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchow, over and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what secrets will the new healthcare plan hold? Paul Prevenza.
Every patient will leave surgery with complimentary surgical instruments.
Amy Dickinson.
Rush Limbaugh is going to cover everyone's copay.
And Charlie Pierce.
Complete coverage of all herbal remedies, including Queen Anne's Lace, Ginkgo Biloba, and your very own federally subsidized watermelon patch.
Well, if any of those are hidden there, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paul Prevenza, Amy Dickinson, Charlie Pierce. Thanks to the city of Chicago and the Department of Cultural Affairs and everyone at Millennium Park. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.